the most important issues of the day. This is the Rick Smith Show. I got news for you. And it's going down. Before you come home and tell me you're not angry. And I'll be leaving. And I'll be leaving.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, ricksmithshow.com. Still kind of chuckling over JP Morgan telling investors, don't believe Trump. There's no deal. Don't do it. Don't believe it. Interesting. And again, Wall Street's supposed to love him, at least, well, not today. Anyway, let's find out what's going on around the world. And there in New York City, our good friend Luke Vargas, Talk Media News. Luke, thanks for taking time for us.
You're very welcome. Glad to be with you.
So you got J.P. Morgan saying, that whole deal with China buying autos and tariffs going away, don't believe it. It's probably made up.
I talked to one expert who is excerpted in The World in 2 minutes. Some of your listeners will have already heard it already. But he was basically saying, by his count, there have been five supposed deals between the U.S. and China already over the last 18 months or so, and that each time the real hope is that the countries have really agreed to walk away from the cliff edge of ever escalating tariffs, and that in each of those instances it's appeared to sort of be a false offer, that things get back nasty pretty quickly, that trade talks ostensibly resume and the major differences between all the parties resurface. Surprise, surprise. And so there's not much to suggest that's going to necessarily be any different here, though I will point out we did get one report today coming from the Chinese government that there are something like 38 entities which are soon going to get cracked down on within China for theft of American intellectual property. Very unclear, what those targets are going to be, if this is window dressing or if it signals a real embrace by the Chinese that this is a policy they've got to clean up. I would say I'm skeptical, just insofar as most of the theft of intellectual property by the Chinese is state-sanctioned. And
right.
So they've really refused to even concede up until today, it seems, that this is even an issue that they're going to talk about. And so I would be wary to think that some major progress has been achieved here, but perhaps something is incrementally a little bit different. But I would say that it's almost offset by, I think, kind of a worse dawning realization as far as the markets are concerned, that of all these different camps within the administration, a camp that which is pretty reduced now in the numbers of people who are in the cabinet who believe in it, because most of them have been shown the door, people who believe tariffs are just not worth pursuing at all, that they're such a destructive instrument in a free trade world that they should never be even used as a last resort. Probably the largest contingent within the president's economic team are those who think tariffs are okay, but really should only be used when they can unlock ever freer trade. Right? That's that. If freer trade is the end goal of a tariff, eventually, then maybe it's worth pursuing. And then a camp represented mostly by some sort of fringy folks, and maybe Peter Navarro could be put in that camp, who actually think tariffs are like the best tool to get whatever you want in a negotiation. And that's the scenario that makes markets the most nervous. And it's the camp that Trump squarely, proudly proclaimed himself to be in earlier today in this tweet, calling him the tariff. I'm the tariff man. So I don't think that assuages concerns that this 90-day pause on the tariffs is going to end and with a breakthrough, and it increases the suspicion that actually Trump is really willing to push into the period of economic consequences from tariffs before he starts to back off from them. So markets aren't happy. Maybe that certainly isn't the only tool we should use to judge whether the trade talks are going well. But I think we have reason enough to suspect that they're already in a complex spot without needing to throw that in.
Yeah, I'm in the fourth camp. I think tariffs are not a bad thing if used right, and it's an arrow in the quiver. I mean, it's not the first club out of the bag, obviously, but it's got to be there. And if I look at China, how long have we been going through this charade of you know, we're going to crack down, we're going to do something, only to have them buy, you know, more agricultural products, which makes our makes farmers happy. And you go, oh, hey, great, look, we got something out of them. They needed it anyway. There's no great concession there. And only to go back to their ways. I mean, I just saw a thing, you know, today, you know, said that our trade deficit has grown by another $24 billion to this point over last year. And next year, you know, if nothing gets done, it's going to be even greater. At some point, you have to figure out, are we going to just allow China to be our manufacturing base? Is that what's going to happen? Are we going to lose all of it? Or are we going to eventually put our foot down and say, you know what, there's got to be some balance. And I'm a fair trade guy. I'm not a free trade guy. I think you trade with like partners where you can. You trade what you can't produce. But I'm a big fan of domestic production, domestic consumption.
Yeah, no, I think I hear what you're saying. I think one of the concerns here is that, yes, I mean, there will be some extra Chinese dollars coming into this country. And for China, they need to source so much from around the world. That's not an incredibly generous concession. And to boot, what they're going to be buying are really not products that are the future of the American economy, which is not a way of a mean of diminishing sort of certain types of manufacturing or agricultural production, which is, of course, just as necessary, if not more necessary to the world than it's ever been. But, you know, one of the big complaints that the Trump administration and others rightfully have about China is that they're really like sort of only letting in or only buying certain things that are not a threat to China's economic aspirations and the industries that they're guarding very closely. You know, agriculture is one of them where they basically said, look, we'll buy land overseas, we'll buy soybeans from anywhere, we'll get as much food as we can into China as possible. But they're not but they're walling off their economy in many of the areas of sort of future economic growth, high tech cars, you know, certain types of software. And that's really what the U.S. would prefer China to be buying from us, as a sign that, you know, trade is going to be building throughout the future, as opposed to just sort of being relegated ever more towards outdated forms of American, you know, economic, you know, manufacturing. And so I think they're buying sort of what they think is relatively sort of low important goods from the United States, which is still very important to the U.S. economy in degrees, but they are, it appears, still walling off huge portions of their economy, and giving us access to those parts of their economy is really what this whole trade thing is about. So
right.
We've got a lot of work to do.
No, sure, but you know, and I don't want to get into a whole long discussion, but you know, since you brought this up, I would argue China's probably doing what's in their, they believe is in their best interest.
Oh yeah,
they're protecting their own manufacturing. They've got, I guess it's what, China 2025 or something.
Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly.
Where they're targeting aerospace, they're targeting tech, they're targeting the next generation of jobs, and they're doing everything they can possibly do to make sure that they win. They're not following some invisible hand mentality that, oh, the market will decide. No, the market won't decide. The market's going to decide where it can make the most money. And if China's buying them, duh, that's where they're going to go. So a lot of this, I think, has to come back to not just, you know, the Chinese, but also American businesses.
Yeah, no, you're very right. It's I'm just sort of marveling at this one thing the president said today where he, you know, we're talking about the markets being a little uneasy about how pro-tariff Trump is, that he thinks they're sort of have inherent worth in and of themselves. I mean, he had this quote where he was basically seemed to reveal a giant misunderstanding about how tariffs work, saying, you know, we are right now taking in billions in tariffs, as if it's some sort of like bonus revenue stream that he suddenly unlocked. When in fact it's really a tax on either consumers or intermediate companies or manufacturers to get their raw inputs or intermediate products. And, you know, yes, some money is being, you know, sort of siphoned off or added to the value of this trade by merit of the tariffs. Yet we should remember that if this whole trade war is about having American intellectual property taken seriously overseas, we should, in China, we should remind ourselves that by some calculations, the range of yearly economic costs posed to American businesses by China stealing our IP, I've seen between $225 billion and $600 billion a year is what we've been cheated out of.
Yep.
And so, skimming a little off the top, and calling it some sort of great tariff boon or whatever Trump is sort of making up here, is just pales in comparison to the value of what our true goals are here. So I think this is a pattern we always see from Trump, be it on foreign policy issues. And, we're not going to get the nuclear stuff, but we'll get a few caskets back, right? I mean, I'm not trying to be too cynical here, but, we'll get a few $1 billion in added trade because of tariffs, but we're not moving any closer to getting the hundreds of billions of dollars back that we need on IP. So let's keep our eyes on the prize here and not get distracted with these sort of incremental victories.
No, I'm 100% with you. I mean, and I would also throw in currency manipulation as a huge part of our problems with China as well. But, this is like, for me, and this is where I hate defending the guy, but, your only tool, the only tool that you have is these tariffs, because you're not going to cut off trade entirely. So you've got to make it a little more painful. And there are those who believe that it's going to be a little more painful for China than it will be for us. And that's the calculus. And we'll see how it plays out. But you're right. I mean, it ultimately will be a tax on business, these tariffs, which they will either choose to pass on to consumers or they won't. It is what it is. And we'll see. Now, look, you look at the GM thing. Everyone's saying, see, the tariffs put GM into this position. No, it didn't. GM made this decision before the tariffs happened. So yeah. I'm not buying any of that. We'll see, I guess.
Let me just say very briefly, we didn't have a chance to talk on Friday, but before the G20 meetings, there was some good analysis in Bloomberg and elsewhere that sort of talked about how among the G20 countries, President Trump has sort of surprisingly, built up a decent number of supporters of his sort of tariff agenda against China, that there are a number of countries who relatively privately, but still notably, back what President Trump is doing and saying, look, it's actually good we finally have a sustained sort of economic assault on, normal trade with China in the hopes of kind of changing their practices. But we saw at the G20 just how delicate that coalition is and signs that Trump, even when he's got a coalition sort of willing to give him the benefit of the doubt, his tendencies can really shatter those coalitions pretty quickly. He had a meeting with the Argentine president, a conservative leader, Mauricio Macri, and Sarah Huckabee Sanders put out a statement at the end of the meeting. I don't have the quote in front of me, but she essentially said, look, the two countries agreed on how terrible China's predatory lending practices are. I mean, it was sort of called out China's trade problems by name, and that was great. Thing is, the Argentine presidential spokesperson comes out several minutes later and issues a statement saying, I forget what you say, but again, it's like, we disagree with the adjectives used by the White House, that we actually, that's not what we think of China's trade practices. Like, we want to ensure good relationships with China. And it shows you just how delicate this is. Trump, and I think this is actually, it's a sort of come around to some of your gentle and very nuanced cheerleading of what the president is doing. I think it's unfortunate that there are these countries that are willing to go with us and lend us some support on this. But as soon as we force them into these situations where they've got to kind of be accountable for an anti-Chinese statement, they all balk. And you saw, the Argentine are exporting soybeans and other products that they weren't exporting in such great numbers, because now they have a chance to do that because the U.S. soybean tariff. So they're benefiting from Chinese trade right now. They would like changes in the long term, but their immediate calculus is to be pretty, is to guard the current good relations with China and not try to rock the boat. So, if I'm Trump, I'm looking at this and saying our allies aren't standing up to us, and I'm missed off about that, and that is a problem. But he's also, if you're going to try to wage this battle successfully, the White House is going to need to learn to do a better job of sort of not putting our allies in those difficult situations, right, where we got to build, and my answer, unfortunately, and it's not the way we're going, is the best way to, protect those allies from being penalized in a one-on-one setting against China is to lump them into formal multilateral cohorts where you can guard them by their numbers and say, all of us agree that what China is doing in this respect is bad. And that way, Argentina alone or whatever country it is, isn't punished individually. So it's a tightrope. I don't know if the White House is up for it, but you can see that we could spoil this ill will if the Trump administration keeps running its mouth and speaking on behalf of our allies.
And especially, you know, it's all in the fact that they have no diplomacy. I mean, these are bulls in China shops.
Yeah.
Let's move on. Big news today. The CIA director, Gina Haspel, testified before the Senate today on the Khashoggi murder. What did we find out?
Yeah, speaking of pretty difficult to explain White House political thinking about, you know, how this would all go down. It turns out sending two administration officials, Pompeo and Mattis, to essentially perhaps mislead, lie to members of Congress, at the very least waste their time last week by giving them one purported line of argumentation about the U.S.-Saudi relationship and apparently to claim to lawmakers last week that there is really no consensus that the Saudi crown prince was responsible for ordering the killing of Jamal Khashoggi. Well, CIA Director Gina Haspel, who was the only person in this administration thus far at a senior level to listen to the execution tape, and whose own department agency has ruled that MBS was indeed behind the ordering of that execution. Well, she testified today, and I think the glaring inconsistencies between what she said and what these other even more senior administration officials told lawmakers last week has really pushed some Republicans over the edge, to the extent that they're now basically coming to terms with the fact that the White House is obstructing them. Right. I know Rand Paul doesn't speak for all conservatives, but he does, I think, or was articulating sort of the frustration of some conservative backbenchers today when he was banging down the door, metaphorically, of the hearing for Haspel today, because not every senator was invited. It was just the leadership, whereas all of the Senate was invited to hear whatever spin Pompeo and Mattis were willing to put out there last week. And so, you know, Rand Paul is calling this a deep state conspiracy, and it's not a deep state of the left-leaning bent that Trump is complaining about. He's basically saying the Kushners and the Trumps are trying to mislead the Congress on this relationship or whatever it is. That was pretty stunning. And to hear people like Lindsey Graham and Bob Corker come out and say, look, what we heard today really changed our minds. You know, we've got to realize the crown prince was behind this. What's his name? Graham going even farther, saying we got to, you know, stop our arms sales until this guy is removed from the line of royal succession. And those are hard words. And I cannot think that increasing the ill will and the lack of loyalty that members of this Congress have towards, Republican members of this Congress have towards President Trump, that's going to shoot President Trump in the foot if in the next 6 months or whatever Mueller drops a report and asks if the Congress wants to proceed with charges. I could see some scenario where Republicans, an increasing number of them, are basically saying, if you're going to treat us like we're the political opponents and you're trying to, you know, obstruct our investigations and things like that, you know, we're supposed to be on the same team here and Trump is too much of a liability. That might be wishful thinking. But one could see, I do think it was pretty visible today that Republicans, or at least a number of them, feel like, Trump's sort of the White House policy on this whole Khashoggi thing has been so shambolic that it's got to stop.
Wow. And eventually they go, hey, you know, Pence would be a better choice right around before the next election. And finally, the big news that I saw coming out of Qatar, evidently they're leaving OPEC.
It's symbolic. They are one of the founding members of OPEC, but they only produce something like 2% of OPEC's oil, and they're really a gas player. I think the natural gas is Qatar's big export. This is so symbolic that this, alliance that had pretty, you know, big aspirations to control global oil markets is, you know, fracturing sort of at its political core. And I think it represents sort of further proof of what we're seeing across all multi-party frameworks around the world, or many of them at least, which is that these groups set up in a different economic climate to try and partner countries up that have joint interests are all really straining. And countries are increasing. Qatar here, I think, is a great example of a country that basically says, look, we're in a different market now. We've got oil, but we could kind of care less whether or not our oil policy is aligned with the Saudis and everyone else. Let's go off and seek smaller alliances and try to carve out more narrow relative advantage over other trading competitors, as opposed to enmeshing ourselves in some sort of multilateral framework and advancing our interests that way. You know, I'm not going to cry tears over OPEC having a little bit of trouble now. They've been an irritant to American energy policy for a long time. But I do think you're seeing, you know, it's quite telling when, you know, of course, the UN and NATO and the G20 are having problems. But even OPEC, that sort of, you know, group of countries which typically can agree to disagree on almost everything as long as they keep oil prices in the same direction. The fact that they're sort of having some internal qualms shows you, or challenges, shows you this is just not the age of multilateralism, even if it's in OPEC.
Yeah, we most certainly live in scary times when even the greedy can't figure out how to stay at the same trough.
Well, they actually think they can break the pretense of being the guardians of global energy security, which is a, you know, an argument that OPEC boosters always use, and they're actually thinking, oh, we can get even more greedy if we break out of that, if we drop the pretense and just sort of challenge each other directly. So, yeah, you're exactly right.
Interesting. Luke, I appreciate the time. As always, informative, educational, and, well, scary.
We'll add fun to that one day, but sorry I couldn't do it this week.
Good stuff. Thanks so much, Luke. Appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
Our good friend Luke Vargas, Talk Media News. Quick break. Right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. I'm the talk.
Of, for, and by, we the working people. The Rick Smith Show.